Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Flames Unfiltered, an off-season special edition with your host, myself, Kai Lewis, and as always, Brad Bird. Brad, what is going on in this slow, molasses-running type summer that we're experiencing?
There's moments.
Which is probably a good thing that come mid-year last year, we decided, hey, let's run it through the summer, but let's have a lot of cool special topics. And we've come up with a lot, and thank goodness we did.
We've had little choice in the matter. Very little choice.
Been a savior on this one. So that's good. And today we got a fun one. This is one that you brought to me not too long ago. And I definitely put it on the ledger as a special episode for the summer. And I'm pumped to do it. So, yeah.
So I got the inspiration a little while ago. And I don't entirely know where it came from. But somehow, some way, I found myself watching YouTube and watching a clip. It's a rabbit hole, right? Anybody watching YouTube, you see a look on Brad's face. Like,
I gotta talk to you about it. When you keep going, and then I'm gonna tell you what happened to you with YouTube this year.
All right, so I'll tell the preface to this whole episode first. So the idea of individual, like, great seasons came through some link chasing on YouTube, reminiscing about a Flames game I was at, and then watching a certain player in the season he had, and it's like, holy shit, this is a cool idea for an episode, because we all have certain memories of players who just had monster seasons with their favorite team. So before I delve into my first Flame who had a monster season, Brad, what did I just inspire you to say?
Well, when the season ends, usually, I always say to myself, like, I watch a lot less TV in the summer because it's light out late at night. And I mean, where I'm living, it doesn't get dark until about 10 o'clock at night. And so, like,
same here,
you're up. I mean, you know, it's hard to go to bed early, and you're up, and you're not inside the house watching TV like you are on the cold winter nights. So I'm always like, what am I going to watch when hockey season ends? And some years I've picked like Netflix, different series or something, and this year when it ended, I was asking the guys at work, I'm like, hey, you got any ideas? Nobody said anything. So I was on YouTube, and I don't usually go to YouTube, but this summer I did. And I have watched so many unbelievable things. And one thing that I'm kind of stuck on right now, and I kind of got to get off of it because it's a rabbit hole. I'm not gaining a whole lot of it, but some entertainment. Is a series called Chasing Cardboard, where this guy goes around and buys like giant estates of sports cards collections. It's kind of like American Pickers / Pawn Stars, but with sports cards and sports memorabilia. And it's been cool. It's been really cool. There's been some good ones, and I went down that rabbit hole. But I've also watched some really good documentaries. I'm drawing a blank right now. I know you've read the book, Finding Murph, or what's, is that, did I nail the book right? Did I get it right?
Yeah, it's Finding Murph by Rick Westhead. Yep.
I watched that documentary on YouTube. Very, very good. Mm-hmm. And I've watched the Bobby Ryan documentary on YouTube this summer. There's just a ton, and it's a rabbit hole that if you go down it, I can see where you'd come up with this great, great topic, because there's a lot of fun stuff, man.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of it. I mean, that's what makes this really interesting, to preface a little bit further. It's that every single one of us who watches pro sports, we all have very particular memories of a player at a given point that stood out to us in a big, big way. Typically, as a youth, as an adolescent, where it's like, man, this guy is it, right? Mm-hmm. And to be fair to our listeners, like you and I, as we often do, we don't over prepare for our shows. We come up with a concept. We might rattle off one or two ideas, and then it's just we completely, it's totally improv, right? So I don't know what you have in mind. You don't know what I have in mind.
Nope.
So it makes this so fun. So we get to talk in this show about those seasons that stood out to us. It's like, holy shit, this guy is going to be a star, or this guy is really going to be the future of this team, or whatever the case may be.
You know what else is cool? When we started liking the team, and because of our age difference, we, through our like influential years, I want to call them. Is that the right word?
Yeah, I think so.
They were at different time frames.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
It kind of brings a broader picture. And in your time frame, I have a much different perspective of it than you do because of age. And you, in my time frame, when I started liking the team, you were a young kid. So your perspective is just the fun, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the team to me was like the little train that could, but really couldn't, right? I mean, there were nobody, especially living in the East Coast. And this is the thing. So where I live, it's Toronto, Montreal, Boston fans. There's a handful of Senators fans who are, you know, my age or younger, because the Senators only became a team in the 90s. And there's a few oddballs like me. Very few are diehard, you know, Flames fans, a couple Oilers fans. Like, it's just different, right? No matter where you go, depending on where you grew up and what area you grew up in, we all have different memories of, you know, what made us a hockey fan, what made our favorite team our favorite team. And anyway, so all that said, I want to rattle off a few of my favorite individual seasons of Flames history. And they're not necessarily the ones you think. It's easy to point to Jerome McGinley in 2002, Theo Fleury in 1991, Al MacInnis win the Conn Smythe, blah, blah, blah. But for myself, the one that came to mind that inspired this episode, and because of that, that's where I'll start, was Mike Camilleri in 2008-2009. So, as I recall, I was sitting in my basement, and on my wall is hanging Mike Camilleri's only red home playoff jersey that he wore in the series against Chicago in 2009. Looking at that jersey, I thought, man, he had such a great year. I want to look that up. I went on YouTube, and I watched, I think, most of, if not every single goal Mike Camilleri scored as a Flame in 08-09, which was 39 of them. And as we've talked about before, it's always disappointing when he doesn't quite hit 40, doesn't quite hit 50, blah, blah, blah. But rattles off 39 goals. And undoubtedly, and Mike Gold will back me up on this because he's mentioned this on X before as well, undoubtedly one of the purest snipers the Flames ever had. This guy was like, they called him a mini Brett Hull for a reason, man. And I saw my first Flames game against the Columbus Blue Jackets and the second one against the Minnesota Wild. I have the order wrong here, but anyway. And he scored in both those games and was just like, you know, one knee, half clapper, top of the circle, like, and he did it all season long. And remember when he did this, this is when the team had moved on from Alex Tanguay, yep, and everybody was thinking, oh, we need another scorer, playmaker, somebody on the wing to help Jerome McGinley. And Camilleri was that guy.
So when you know, and I remember that season too. I really do. And I remember his scoring touch. And one thing I got a question about him. Do you see some likenesses in Matthew Coronato in Michael Camilleri? Do they remind you of each other, or am I kind of a little off on that?
Well, they don't look dissimilar, for starters.
Oh, they do look actually somewhat similar.
Yeah, yeah.
I just feel like, okay, I don't remember what goal it was this year, but I remember Coronato getting a shot coming down the right side, and just the way he shot it, it reminded me of Camilleri. And
yeah, despite the fact that one shoots left, one shoots right.
Yes.
You raise a good point, though, because in hockey nomenclature, a sniper is just a guy that scores a lot of goals, you know, outside of the crease, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
And both those guys do that. Camilleri had a wicked, wicked shot, typically, as I recall, on you know, the one-timer, but Coronato more on the wrister. But I mean, these are guys that they're not going to make an Adam Oates type pass every night to set somebody up. They're going to bury the puck when you put it on their stick. And that's what you're looking to them for. Right.
You find it weird too, like when people in the hockey world and I suppose us included talk about like hard shots. A lot of us relate to like slap shots and honestly, like a hard wrist shot or a hard snapshot is so much more effective and so much rare. It's a lot more rare,
man,
that shot. And it's such an overlooked thing. I know that's a sidetrack on this, but it is such an overlooked thing.
Well, it is, and it's funny because when you look at teams that are successful, and even the Flames last season have as much success as they had, you know, I was at the game in Montreal where Coronado won the game in overtime, right? He was on his off wing. 3-on-3 overtime, just a beautiful, just rocket of a wrist shot. And I remember sitting there, and I was sitting at the end of the ice, you know, in the offensive zone for the Flames. When he released that puck, it was a probably, God, I don't know, 1.5 to 3 seconds wherein I realized he scored. That's how quickly that puck left his stick, was in the back of the net.
Yeah.
And for guys to be able to do that, and to this day, much like it was when Camilleri played, it's so rare that a player can just bury the puck like that. I mean, you have teams that have great systems, that have great playmakers. They have guys in front of the net, you know, screening goaltenders, shots on the point, blah, 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 blah. But guys who just score goals. And Camilleri, as you'll likely remember as well, I think it was 2 years later, had an unreal playoff run with Montreal. He had like 13 goals and, you know, 20 games, whatever it was. I mean, just a pure sniper. And when you have a guy like that in your lineup, you're never truly out of a game, right? Because they have the ability to shoot a puck in a way that will tie a game, give you the lead, put you back in the game, just on the turn of a dime. Like, and when I think about the way that he played for Calgary in that 1 year, and it's so sad it was only 1 year, and he came back later, as we all know, he wore number 93 in his return and was like part of that whole, we're going to try and make the playoffs thing a couple years later. He just added an element to this team where you just knew Jerome McGinley was not the only sniper he had to worry about, because Camilleri buried a lot of pucks that year. A lot.
Yeah. No, it's a Flames player that, I think a lot of us forget when he comes to like things like this and how effective he really was. I'm going to switch gears. And the one that comes to my mind is such a year where I just thought this guy is just dominated in so many ways. And that's the 05-06 Kiprusoff season, a Vezina trophy. He also won the Williams Jennings trophy that year. Won 42 games for the team, a 2.07 goals against average and a 0.923 save percentage. And I just remember that year, and I just remember thinking, this guy gives us a chance against anybody. And that, mm-hmm. you know, that was such a, and I'm not discounting Mike Vernon, but I just think when I think back to Kiprusoff, he won so many games just single-handedly.
What I struggle with in hindsight being what it is, it's like, was the team really that good, you know, when they won like the Northwest Division that season? Or was Kiprusoff just that good? And I'm not sure we'll ever really know the answer, because Kiprusoff was so good that he covered up warts on that team, much the same way Dustin Wolf did in this past 24-25 season, right?
For sure. And it's funny how we relate all these players to players now, and that's a good thing. I'm hoping that we see that. Like, when there was a lot of games this year, once Wolf took over, right, and took that spot as the starter. And you know what? And credit to Dan Vladar too. There wasn't any night this year where I was just like, "Oh no."
Yeah.
Right. Was there nights where you were just like, "Oh no, I worry about our goaltending"? I didn't at all worry about our goaltending ever this year. I didn't.
No, and I don't think that I did either. The only time I felt kind of shaken, I was at that game as well, was the St. Paddy's Day game against the Leafs, where Wolf was not at his best.
He did have a night that night. He did.
But in his defense, to say that Wolf wasn't Wolf in a game means he didn't make every otherworldly save he could possibly make. An off night for Dustin Wolf is a lot of goaltenders' best nights.
I honestly believe that was the best thing that could have happened to him this year, though.
For his development, you mean?
Yes, those nights mentally switch gears for you, right? I mean, it just does. Like, he had to learn that night that, hey, this isn't a cakewalk. And like, it just, I think that helped. Those help. Those really, really help.
Oh, I think they do too. And it's funny to try and think back to 05-06, you know, any nights that Kiprusoff wasn't at his best. I struggle mightily to remember any of them.
Well,
and even, you know,
the YouTube rabbit hole, pull up that highlights of him that season. It's not a 10-minute
deal. Oh, yeah, I'm sure it isn't. I mean, and I think about my conversation with Darren McCarty back in May about how that Flames team should have beat the Ducks in the first round that year. Like, you know, how good that team was. And a lot of it, I don't want to say most of it, but because they had a shutdown defender in Regier. Again, Lowe was still a superstar. But ultimately, Mika Kiprusoff was on a completely other planet. Just a different, another planet, a different level. Nobody could touch him. I don't care if people want to talk about, you know, Martin Brodeur, even Dominic Hasek at the time. Like, you know, these players that were, you know, era defining Hall of Fame goaltenders. In the 05-06 season, Mika Kiprusoff was completely and utterly untouchable. And there's no argument to be made otherwise that I'm aware of anyway. So good call on that one.
I want to go again if I can, and then we're going to switch gears and you can do a couple. You mentioned this one earlier, and this kind of brings us back to another era. That Al MacInnis season was the first time that I remember, like, see, I'm too young. I've never said that on the podcast. I'm too young, but I'm too young to remember like the Bobby Orr, you know, his defensive, like, you know, take control. Like, but this was the first time that I was like, a defenseman was controlling situations and controlling games and not only putting up, you know, crazy points. I believe that year he put up 103 points.
Yeah.
But he was not just, he also was 103 points good on the defensive side of the puck too, right? And he was dominating on both sides, because too many times now we look at defensemen, it's like, well, how many points did he have? It's like, well, yeah, but did he get walked all the time? Did he, you know, was it pizzas up the middle? You didn't get that from MacInnis, and he also put the puck in the net. And what he did to lift this team in the Stanley Cup Finals and was rewarded with a Conn Smythe trophy was crazy, right? I mean, it's just crazy.
It's a while to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So the pride of Inverness, Nova Scotia, Cape Breton. It's funny. I got to mention this because it's so funny. This has been stuck in my head for years. I think I want to say it was Darren Detition, God rest his soul, of TSN, in the 99-2000 playoffs, was doing the highlights of a St. Louis-San Jose playoff game. And MacInnis, for the Blues at the time, of course, wound up, took a slap shot, and scored, of course. And in the highlight clip, Detition said, okay, everybody duck. And you can see when MacInnis shoots the puck, everybody is just getting the hell out of the way, right?
Really? Well, you know, and yeah, you know what's the scary part of this? He did it with a wood stick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And now, you know, in his age now, like, he's had some, you know, well-documented back issues from just ripping pucks for so many years. That's a, you know, it's like a pitcher throwing a baseball. It strains a lot of muscles to follow through and get that power of basically your entire body behind a puck. And, you know, he did it better than anybody. And it's kind of funny. Now that we're talking about it, Brad, I'm kind of reminded how from about 89, you know, MacInnis Conn Smythe season, 91-ish, 92, to that 05-06 season with Kiprusoff, we talked about, there are very few seasons in between we talk about, because we didn't have a lot of star power. We didn't have any really successful seasons to speak of, apart from, you know, 2004. There was like a 10-year period where there weren't really a lot of memorable things going on with the Flames. I mean, you know, if you look at, you know, teams like even the Atlanta Thrashers, and they had Kovalchuk and Heatley and like guys like tearing it up, it's not often a franchise, you could point to the modern-day Buffalo Sabres, but not often a franchise will have such a streak of futility where you can't even find an individual season to, you know, cling to, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Fire one at me.
Well, it's going to seem kind of redundant, but I mean, we're going to talk about the same season that you alluded to with 05-06 to Kiprusoff, and I'm going to go on that same season and mention Dion Phaneuf. So, for me at that time, fresh out of high school, first year university, Dion Phaneuf, 20 goals, 29 assists, or 49 points. The clear favorite for the Calder, had it not been for the emergence that same season of Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he was a defensive stalwart, but the guy ripped home clapper goals and blew up countless players.
But you know what? I almost thought that year he was better defensively than he was in any other year in his career. Call me crazy, but I do believe that. And my first time I ever saw Dion Phaneuf play was at the World Juniors in Grand Forks, North Dakota. And he was part of that dominating team for Team Canada. And
the double D on year?
What's that?
The double D on year? Pierre Maguire with the double D on call. Oh, remember that?
Yeah, I do now that you said that. I was there live. I didn't, you know, and back then I couldn't salvage the Canadian broadcast, but I was there live. I now that you do say that, it does come to me in seeing some highlights of that. But I Dion Phaneuf was, I remember that year just thinking, what do we have in this guy and what can he do for our franchise?
Do you know why, in my opinion, let's go a little bit off the board here in terms of, you know, what made these seasons so successful. The reason I think that you think D'Antoniou was so successful that rookie season, I got two words for you. Roman Hamrlik.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You brought that up on the show before.
The guy was just an anchor for him. But ultimately, it's like, man, it's like, I had lunch today with one of our head estimators at work, and it's the same thing. I'm in a sales role. I can't do my job as effectively as possible without a good staff behind me. That was D'Antoniou, man. He had a total anchor in Roman Hamrlik. You got to have that D partner, that backup goaltender that pushes you, that winger who digs the pucks out for you, whatever it is. For all the years that Phaneuf played in the league, and you know, before he was eventually traded to a very, I feel like he was traded for a kind of inflated price to Toronto, he never ever recaptured that magic of 05-06 and 06-07.
No, he didn't, and which is still kind of surprises me. But you're right, he didn't. But
while you say that, and I agree with you, because it is kind of surprising, but ultimately, how sustainable is that style of play? Ripping pucks home, throwing the body constantly, fighting constantly. Like, man, he came in hot.
I just remember as a fan, though, just like, whoa, we're going to get to watch this for years.
I remember right where I was today, I got traded.
I was shoveling my driveway. I had like a foot of snow shoveling my driveway. I felt my phone buzzing. And I looked, and I just remember standing in the freezing cold, looking at it, and just being like, "Okay." Yeah,
I was at a girlfriend's place at the time, and I remember thinking, like, her parents' place, I should say, and I was like, "Man, what the?"
It was like a Sunday at like 1 o'clock. I remember it. Like,
it was the dead of January, and I remember Brian Brooks' comments saying, "You know, like, this is going to make our team better for the future. We got like our leader, and the Flames will make the playoffs now, and we didn't ultimately." It was January 2010.
Was that when it was?
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, in a lot of ways, it was reminiscent of the Gilmore trade. It was a star player at the time for a lot of spare parts. And to say nothing bad of those players, Matt Stager became a very important piece of the Flames in terms of, you know, developing their youth and his contributions in the 2015 playoff run. But ultimately, a budding star traded for what ultimately amounted to very, very little, right?
Very spare parts, yeah.
So, back to you. What do you got?
I mean, I'm going to stick on the defenseman. And the reason I'm going to talk about this season is because this one, to me, and maybe I'm wrong, this one came out of left field for me. I did not expect this season from him. But in 2018-19, Mark Giordano and his Norris Trophy as the league's best defenseman, you know, 74 points. A plus 39. Like, did anybody in Calgary? I mean, I don't think anybody in Calgary, and I sure as hell would put money out in nobody out of Calgary, had him even on the top five for the Norris Trophy preseason in the betting lines. I bet you could have been walked away a rich man. We didn't see this coming. Now, we all knew that Mark Giordano was a great player and a good defenseman. This just took it to a new level.
Big time. I might even, let's see if I have a photo here, because I just, oh yeah, there it is. If our YouTube viewers can see this, but that is the Giordano signed 2019 Norris Trophy jersey that I got at auction and was able to take a photo with Mark Giordano with back in May. But yeah, to your point, you're absolutely right. Giordano, I think we can both agree that he would have won the Norris Trophy in 2015 had it not been for the torn bicep injury with Steve Bernier against the New Jersey Devils. He was well on his way to winning that Norris, but to come back 4 years later and win the Norris.
And that's the big thing that made me so surprised, is because he was at the peak there, was injured with a pretty severe and difficult injury. And for him, not just like 2 years later, but 4 years later, when he was, I mean, I can't remember, but how old he was in 18, 19, but you know, he wasn't the young defenseman.
He was 37, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah. So he was up there. Right. So, I mean, gosh, like what a season from a guy like him. And he's not the only one in that 18, 19 season we can overlook, because you know, Johnny Gaudreau, that was his 99 point season too, with 36 goals, I believe it was, and it just crazy, right? What a season.
Oh, I mean, for a guy that was never drafted, for a guy that, was considered to be getting long in the tooth, but, you know, still effective. But, like, he was not supposed to win a Norris Trophy, and General Sheridan, if he did it, which was testament to his work ethic and his conditioning. And a lot has been made of his conditioning over the years. But, I mean, yeah, it's kind of sad in a sense when you look back on it that because the emergence of guys like Gaudreau and Kachuk, that Giordano didn't, in hindsight, get quite the accolades he deserved. I mean, winning the Norris is a huge, huge, huge honor. And he didn't just do it because of his offensive receiving performance is a lot, but I mean,
how many other Flames players have won the Norris? Am I losing my mind, but I can't think of any.
No, I don't think so. Gary Suter won the Calder as defenseman. Yeah. McInnes won the Conn Smythe, as we talked about, but
I don't believe there was
he was the first Flame to do so. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I mean, when you think about that.
Well, let's look at the company. So Al McInnes, first and foremost, Dion Phaneuf, Gary Suter, Phil Housley, a legendary American defenseman.
Yeah.
Even some young up and comers like Derek Morris, like none of those guys took home any, you know, other significant hardware than what we already mentioned. So
Robin Aguirre probably should have taken home hardware, never did.
Robin Aguirre was a part of Team Canada at Toronto Olympics in 2006. Yeah. Good he was, right?
I mean, yeah, there should be an award for a guy like him. He didn't put up all the points in the world, but boy, is he a game changer for the Flames.
Oof, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Do you have one more? And I'm going to name some honorable mentions when you're done.
You know, this is kind of the tough part about doing these shows, right? Because we don't have the luxury of, like, you know, that being like the 70s Habs dynasty, the Islanders, Oilers, the 80s. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to drill down. So this really does take a ton of thought. I'm thinking more towards honorable mention side of things because it's hard for me to dedicate another season that really jumped out to me for an individual player.
Yep.
The ones I have that I wanted to just at least bring up, there was three of them that one of them I don't even remember. I just remember seeing highlights. It was Kent Nielsen's 131-point franchise record. I mean, I think, you know, we'd be slighting the franchise if we didn't at least mention that. But Håkan Loob scoring 50 and winning Rookie of the Year. Mm-hmm. Those are huge things. Joel Mullen, 110-point season. In 88-89, he's played 79 games, had 51 goals, 110 points. I mean, like, bonkers numbers. And the only one that I remember and probably think we should at least bring up is the 01-02 againless season. I mean, all the awards you can possibly win were won by againless that year with the Art Ross Trophy and the Ted Lindsay Award. Well, it wasn't Ted Lindsay then. It was a Lester B. Pearson Award, I believe. And correct. That year he won the Rocket Richard Trophy too. So, I mean, that's as good as it gets for the Flames, right?
Yeah. I think the, like, honorable mention in terms of players who these are never going to be like renowned seasons league-wide, but I mean, D. McAmmond, 51 points on the back of 20 goals and 31 assists and a 102 to help Againla hit those numbers.
Yes.
Christian Eustelius, you know, a very particular favorite of our one of our hosts here, Brad. Eustelius had 77 points, I believe, in one season with Calgary. Even Freddie Brathwaite. Freddie Brathwaite pitched 5 shutouts in the 2001. Anyway, there's lots of seasons that lifted this team up beyond the heights it should have otherwise achieved. And, you know, we wish we had time to talk about them all. And I'm hopefully a few of our listeners will chime in, you know, with a couple suggestions of their own. But it's funny, man. It's like when you look at, like, the Edmonton Oilers and Connor McDavid, right? Like, when you have a superstar player that just lifts your team up and takes them to the heights that he does, it's not always going to be a Stanley Cup final, but you look at players and think, man, where would this team be without a marketable star like what we have with Jerome McGinley and John Gaudreau, right? Like,
yeah,
that's those individual seasons, as much as it's a team sport, the individual seasons are what draw people in. That's where kids find their favorite players. That's where you get more, you know, engrossed in a story about the guys can hit 40, 50, 60 goals, right? And we've had our fair share for a team that hasn't had a ton of, you know, widespread success, right? Or sustained success.
One thing that's different about Calgary too is, like, we've really, really had those players that just year in and year out put up giant numbers, right? And that's not a slight on Jerome McGinley, but I think a lot of people in the hockey world would agree, like, as much of a great goal scorer as he was so much more of a player as far as a power winger and doing other things on the ice too. So, you didn't get those, you know, 110 point seasons just one after another with Jerome McGinley, but you got so much more, right? And we just didn't have this franchise just doesn't have that constant, that player that just continually did it year after year. And maybe we would have had that in Johnny Gaudreau. We don't know, right? But the seasons that what I would consider our star players put up were pretty impressive. And one thing that really is amazing is like what you've brought up, I don't want to call them non-superstars, but guys that we did not expect to have big years and did, like the Camilleri's and the Dean McCammons and players such as that.
Yeah, I mean, some guys we knew would do well, but I mean, like even Damon Lankow had a monster year when he played in 05-06. He went from 59. I remember the numbers so well. I think anyway, 59 points in that first 05-06 season to 06-07, where he put up like 77. I mean, those guys that came in, played above their heads a bit. They weren't going to be 100 point players. Even Elias Lindholm in 21-22, right?
Yeah. Oh,
80 some points. Yeah, I mean, those guys translated those into success and paydays elsewhere, and good for them, you know. But
I think we're reaping the rewards on that one too, because we were able to move them for pieces that, I mean,
oh yeah,
pretty 100%. Good right now, right?
Anytime you can take, if you can parlay a trade into two or three trades that keep you, you know, above water, like, you know, trading Adam Fox to get Lindholm as part of that deal. Then Lindholm to get a piece like Burstavich. I mean, you're doing good things. And that's kind of what it comes down to. If you're not drafting well, if you're not trading well, if you're in a smaller market, it's really hard to constantly manufacture players that are impact players. And we've had a lot of pretty good players who've had monster seasons. My favorite memory, just to I'll close, you know, my piece in this by saying, when the Flames first acquired Alex Tanguay.
Yeah.
I remember a buddy of mine texted me. I was living at my parents' house at the time. He texted me on the Saturday, I think it was the draft day. He said, have fun with Tanguay. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, Tanguay? I'm like, oh my God, the Flames acquired Alex Tanguay. And he went on to have 81 points, I want to say, with playing alongside Aguilar.
Yeah.
That was a phenomenal season. Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what we need someone to do this year, is step up like that, you know?
And maybe
do that?
Yeah, why do you think the team retreaded guys like Camilleri and Tanguay and Jokinen and brought them all back to try them again? Because they had significant success here. And for those of us who grew up watching those teams, that's not lost on us, right?
No, you're right. You're right. It's funny. We've had a fair share of you know, and you know, we forget, you know, this organization has had to kind of make their stars out of low picks, with Gaudreau panning out. I believe he's a seventh rounder, right? Theo Fleury was Gaudreau was fourth. Fleury was a late pick too. And I mean, seventh, I believe. Right. Those are good. Prominent players for this organization that, you know, we picked in late rounds, and that's amazing. And a credit to that. And honestly, a credit to a scouting staff that me and you've been super critical of, and the whole fan base has, and rightfully so. It's fun, and it's fun to think of the Camilleri's and the Giordano seasons and stuff like that. But a great topic, and hell of an idea, Kyle. I liked it. I looked forward to doing this one.
You know, sometimes it just, the inspiration hits you, right? That's what doom scrolling on your phone will do.
All right, Flames fans, thanks for joining us on this summer off-season edition as we slog through this uneventful, no news. And you know what? I'll probably say this, and now tonight somebody will get moved, just so I can sound like an idiot, because that happens quite frequently as soon as we record something like this. But I don't know. It's been fun doing these special episodes, and it's got us through some quiet times this summer. But it's also sparked a lot of conversations and thoughts about the history of the Flames and how really good some of these memories are for both of us.
Not exactly. And as we feel more memories to be made, I mean, we can talk about Dustin Wolf's season this past year as an example of that. So stay tuned. We'll keep the fun content coming, and we're always open to suggestions too.
All right, friends, have a good week.
Thanks for listening to Flames Unfiltered with Brad Berube and Kyle Lewis, your source for unfiltered Calgary Flames hockey talk. Keep it locked on flamesunfiltered.ca. Subscribe where you get all your podcasts to never miss an episode. Flames Hockey Talk every week, presented by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.
Do you?